brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 23 for April 5th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conam Muinechon. Dias Marivagas Keith Falcher Overstach. Hello and welcome to technology.ie. My name is Conam Muinechon in the Edgecast Media Studio, and at his home in Carlow, it's Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Good evening, Con.
How are you?
Not too bad.
You were just telling me, as you said yourself, I must be the only person who doesn't know that you were robbed during the week.
I was, yeah. It's more than a little annoying, to say the least.
You're in surprisingly good form, all things considered.
Well, there's no point crying over spilled milk. You know, you move on. And it's one of those things.
Yeah, yeah. But they took your PCs and your Macs and...
Well, they took my Macs. There's no PCs. My house isn't polluted with PCs. They took two laptops, my iMac, and my TV.
Oh dear! What's the TV like?
The new one or the old one?
I don't know, because I know you're a DVD connoisseur.
Well, the old one was an LG 42 inch, so I upgraded it to a Samsung 46 inch LED with 3D smart TV and all that kind of thing, which we can talk about on another show. But it's got all sorts of interesting features. Which is pretty cool.
Which someone else is enjoying now.
Well, no, the new TV has the cool features. The old one didn't.
Oh, so which one did they take? The old one?
Yeah, of course.
Right. Any progress in the investigation?
I'm too early to say. I mean, we'll see what happens.
You won't hold your breath, I suppose, but you never know.
I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, look, I've done what I can. I've made police statements. I've had... Mm. Crime scene people around, all the fun and games.
Oh, really? What's the technology like there?
Look, it's not anything like you'd see on CSI. But
black,
you know,
lights.
They come around and they try to get fingerprints off things.
They have any interesting techniques or anything? I bet the banter is good between them. You know, the old Grissom and Catherine Willows kind of thing going on. No?
I mean, it's an interesting experience. I mean, to say that you've got like four members of the local drug squad sitting in your sitting room on a Thursday evening makes it an interesting evening.
It's something to talk about, I suppose. Of course, the issue, though, with relation to that, and the thing that I find, I suppose, particularly upsetting, if you take a TV or a microwave, that's okay. You don't quite engage with it in the same way that you engage with a computer. And there's a whole issue of the data that you have on that and your whole personal information that you may have stored on it. That's kind of worrying as well.
Well, of course it is. But, I mean, you know, we had an issue and a security issue in the company a couple of months ago. So since then, we've tightened up a lot of things. So a lot of data anyway wouldn't have been on any computers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't generally have much on my local file system. I mean, applications installed, the odd file, but nothing crucial. Pretty much everything is in the cloud.
Well, it's a reminder to be, I suppose, that security is something to be conscious of. We'll talk again about it, Michaela, and I hope you get your stuff back and I hope you get your peace of mind back as well along with it. Lots of stuff to talk about on the show this week on technology.ie. We're going to go through. I want to talk a bit just before we started, actually, this evening. I was watching the live stream, which I didn't get to watch live this week, of the debate at the Science Gallery on copyright with Minister Sean Sherlock and Tom Murphy from boards.ie. Who else was there? John Kennedy from Silicon Republic, I think, was chairing it. And Simon McGarr was going to be there, and he wasn't going to be there, and that we'll talk about that later as well in the show. Lots to talk about. Facebook Timeline for Pages is now live. Are you ready? We're going to talk about Dropbox. They've upped the offers for referrals on that and why your company sucks at social media. But first of all, and Jeff Bezos, he's finding bits of NASA rocket engines. Most of these links that you've come up with this week, Michaela, and thanks for that. But first of all, 8-bit Google Maps and other April Fool's stories. This was a good one. I hadn't actually checked this out on 1st of April, but I did in response to your mentioning it, go looking for it there this evening. And it's funny to see the world in 8-bit resolution.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I was looking at some of this stuff over the weekend, and, you know, first of all, yeah, it's really bizarre kind of looking at 8-bit graphics. But then the other thing which made me think of was, you know, back in the early 90s and even before then, when I had a Spectrum 48K and You know, computers weren't that fast. You know, people managed to do things with, you know, very little resources. And, you know, the same thing with websites. I mean, if you look at how websites were back in the mid-90s when the web was first born, and now you look at what we're dealing with. And, you know, people kind of forget that not everybody's going to have a really high-powered computer. Not everybody's going to have a massive screen with really high resolution. And, you know, it's an interesting segue when you look at, say, mobile websites. So, yeah, there's an entire thing there. I mean, it was interesting to see what Google was doing with...
It was. Now, it wasn't any practical use whatsoever. When you zoomed in on it, there was, for example, there was not much in the way of roads or detail or anything like that in it. It was for fun and for, I suppose, nostalgia's sake as well, that they did this whole rendering of Google Maps in 8-bit graphics, a throwback and a nod to the days of early games consoles and things like that. Is that something that you that appeals to you, Michele? That kind of early graphics, that early computer nostalgia?
Well, to a point, yeah. I mean, I remember, like, you know, some of the first computers I ever used were so simple by comparison. Yet at the time, they were marvels. I mean, looking at the, you know, somebody bringing in what was that one? Was it the Commodore 64?
Commodore 64, yeah.
Do you remember them? I mean, if you think about it, Colm, like, yeah. I pick up my mobile phone now. I've got my email on it. I've got a web browser, which is, you know, not bad. I can watch videos on it. I can interact with people around the world on, you know, social media, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, or whatever you want to call it, and a whole load of other things. I mean, you know, my mobile phone is more powerful than, I don't know, 100 or 200 computers that I would have had back
it is. I mean, what would you do with 64K of RAM nowadays? You wouldn't even look at it, you know. It's hilarious when you think about it. Yes, the ZX Spectrum, was it the Sinclair Spectrum, was, I think, the most popular one back. I'd be going back a little bit further than you, Michele, perhaps back to the I suppose early 80s, I suppose, in with some of the stuff that I remember. I remember in particular we backed the wrong platform. You know, you remember, you know, how it was, and it still is to this day. I mean, what platform you choose in terms of what software is going to be available for it is always kind of critical. And it was very interesting there in the early 80s. There was this whole load of similarly resourced machines, 64K of RAM, the BBC Micro, the Commodore 64, the Spectrum. The one we went for was, I don't know if you ever heard of it, the Sharp MZ700.
No, never heard of that one.
It was extraordinary. I mean, it was one of these ones that everybody was, of course, was coming out with a microcomputer in those days. They were all coming out with home computers, and Sharp's effort was this. Not a bad machine at all. It was 64K of RAM. I remember you'd load up the basic interpreter and it took about half of that RAM, and then you could put whatever you want then after that. Took 4 minutes to load anything decent on a cassette tape. Do you remember those?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, I remember having, you know, to hook it, you know, you'd load up a game or something on the on the Spectrum, and it would take, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes sometimes.
That's right.
And you remember the tape, and you just, I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
I remember even getting one of those little printers that went with it. It was a tiny little yoke. It was it's only a few inches wide, and it had the most expensive paper known to man that went into it, and, you know, the quality of the printing was terrible.
That's right. We had one of those. That actually integrated right into that Sharp MZ700. It went in as a kind of a module slotted into it, this little printer plotter, and it was essentially a till receipt is what it was. But yeah. Those were the days, without a doubt. Back to 2012, Michele, and I have in my hand a brand new phone, which is, in terms of the for example, in terms of the storage, I don't even know what the internal storage in it is, but I've got a micro SD card in it with 32 gigs, which I basically transferred from my old Android phone. I'm back in the smartphone world. I was teaching my 5-year-old daughter the word smartphone this evening. She overheard me chatting to somebody on the phone, and then she said, "Dad, did you get a smartphone?" She was intrigued by the whole idea of it, but basically, as far as they're concerned, all phones are smartphones now. All phones are... the only phones that matter are ones with touch screens and iPhones and things like that. So I got rid of the old Nokia. What was it I was using there? The Nokia N95, wasn't that it? A throwback to the ancient days of only 4 or 5 years ago. But definitely, I don't regret it. I was using it temporarily after my my previous Android phone died. And went in this morning to O2, checked out what they had on offer. Decided not to go iPhone this time, Michaela. It's on my plan, it's €150 to upgrade. I'm due the upgrade, but I would still have to pay that. So I said, well, what have you got that's kind of for cheap or even free in relation to Android phones? I'm already very happy with Android. And so I got this for free, literally a free upgrade on this with a gold upgrade with O2. And I'm just basically back in, loading up all my old Android apps. I'm very, very comfortable in the whole world of Android. Michaela, I don't know, have you any experience with it? Or?
Well, I tried it out. And I mean, yeah. I think we mentioned briefly about how I upgraded my mother to an Android there about a month or two back.
How's that going?
Well, she's able to make phone calls. I mean, that's the main thing. I mean,
yeah.
You know, for her, the key thing is being able to make phone calls and being able to send text messages.
What's she into, Michaela? Is she into TV programs, news?
Oh, she'd be into current affairs.
Yeah.
TV, and she uses Sky Plus extensively. I mean, if you go down to her place, you know, the Sky Plus is practically overflowing with content at all the time. So, yeah, I think part of it was that with my sister being in Australia, there's a few apps you can get for smartphones that allow you to text people for free across Wi-Fi and things like that. So I think that was...
And
that
is
was
she using those?
Sorry?
Is she using those?
I don't know if she is, I'll be honest with you, because it was one of those kind of weird things that basically I got her set up and then I disappeared off gallivanting around the world for a few weeks. And then she had the Lifelong Learning Festival on and a couple of other things. So I haven't been down home now in quite some time. So.
Well, you'll have to report in due course, because it is something I'm interested in basically what people who mightn't be traditionally technologically inclined, what they do when you put a smartphone in their hands. And I was talking to somebody, I was interviewed actually on radio recently, and I was saying, you know, definitely you give someone a smartphone, it changes their lives. And the presenter said to me, well, you know, in my experience, she said... A lot of people who get them don't like them and want to go back to your old-fashioned kind of feature phone and things like that. I don't think that's really true, Michaela, but I'm open to correction on this, as I always say, if people want to leave a comment on the site at technology.ie. My experience has been, as I said, and I'd say, you know what I'd recommend for your mum, actually, would be, and if she's into news, it would be, say, the RTE News app and the Sky News app, and a few more like those, France Van Katter, and a few more like those, because in particular, my wife is a news junkie now and absolutely has forsaken the TV news bulletins. Now, she's still getting her news from RTE and Sky and places like that, but she's getting it, consuming it at her own pace when she's actually using the app in her mobile device. Let's move on, Michaela. There's loads to talk about. Your company sucks at social media. You sent me this link. What's it about?
It was one of these links that Kelly sent me. Kelly, she actually did a guest post on our blog there during the week.
That's Kelly who writes your press releases.
She is Kelly, Super Kelly, as I like
Excellent.
To call her. And it's a fantastic article. And it just goes through some of the real... I mean, how can I put this? I mean, the things you read it and you're going to go, yeah, that is so true. And it's about how people... make a total mess of social media. I mean, companies, obviously.
It's about how companies do it, and they hire gurus, with inverted commas, or leave them in or out, as you choose, and they tell them that they're going to get them a high score on clout, or they're going to do this, that, or the other, and there's no meaningful engagement going on, but there's a lot of hand-waving and bluster.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like with a lot of these things around technology. I mean, there's lots of buzzwords. If you remember, you know, a few years ago, everybody had to have a blog. And now everybody has to have Facebook and everybody has to have Google Plus and they have to have Twitter and they have to have, you know, whatever the next big thing is going to be. And of course, the problem is that, you know, some people will do it and they'll do it properly, but a lot of people are just going to flounder around the place and they get sucked in by these, well, what's the polite word? Oh, yeah, chancers. There we go. I could think of several other words, but none of them are for broadcast, I'm afraid.
Looking at this article here, it says, who should you hire? Pretty much anybody but those people, the chancellors, you mean. Seriously, go walk around the office and look for someone who is cool but bored with their current position and who can hold a decent human-style conversation and see if they want to take a swing at it. Simply running a corporate Facebook and Twitter account is not a full-time job and does not require a dedicated employee. All it really takes is someone with a little humility, some people skills, a sense of humour about their role, a decent enough grasp of the internet, and a couple of hours each day to interact with the void. Tops. Ideally, and as long as your hiring practices hadn't allowed doofuses into your company, this would mean most of your co-workers are able to do it. Would you agree with that, Michele?
Oh, totally. I totally would agree with it. I mean, the way I see, you know, you see companies that are actually successfully using it is they get people who actually are dealing with customer service or have an understanding of what's going on in a company and know who to talk to and how to get things done. And, you know, they have meaningful engagement. I mean, you're talking to other human beings. You're not just going to be broadcasting, you know, press releases and other kind of stuff that nobody really cares about. I mean, sure, you can do that, but it has to be about having a conversation, a dialogue, an engagement. It's, you know, social media, the social thing. It's about human beings.
You've got it pretty well down at Black Knight, Michele. It's a fairly straightforward and simple thing to do, and there's a few of you that, for example, tweet on the Black Knight account. You get various staff members to blog on the Black Knight blog. It's not rocket science, but it's effective.
Well, it's something, you know, it takes a certain amount of thought. I mean, it's not completely random, but at the same time, it's not rocket science. I mean, it's just something that, you know, do you feel that employee is able to actually do it? I mean, things you have to be careful with is that they're going to give sane answers to questions, that they're not going to embarrass the company in public. But I mean, once you get beyond that, I mean, pretty much anybody can do it.
Speaking of rocket science, what's Jeff Bezos up to?
Yeah, Bezos, he's
a character. See what I did there? Did you like that? Go on.
No, he's a character.
He's the CEO founder of Amazon. Go on. What's he doing? He's up to, it's like these gentlemen adventurers are doing all kinds of exciting things at the moment. Jeff he wants to get the Apollo 11 rockets up from the bottom of the sea.
Yeah, I mean, this is really incredible. I mean, he's a billionaire at this stage.
Yeah.
And he's just gone off of his own accord, and he's not going to get anything from it, because as far as he's concerned, any bits of NASA rocket engines are still property of NASA. So, you know, he'll hand it over to NASA. And he's gone off, and he's managed to find them. I can't remember what depth they're at. There's some ridiculous depth under the sea. But he's not the only one. I mean, James Cameron's off gallivanting around the place. Going into the deepest, was it the deepest valley in the sea or something?
No, that was something else. And I mean, it's all very well to be rich and to fund these expeditions and to send some poor monkey or some poor individual down in a pod off on whatever it is that you're going to explore. But no, James wasn't going to let anyone else sit into the capsule. He went down himself.
Yeah, but this is James Cameron we're talking about. I mean, the same guy. I mean, there's an article in the most recent issue of National Geographic by him talking about the Titanic. And, you know, it's like he's like a kid in a sweet shop. I mean, he was exploring the Titanic using these little robot submarine things. I mean, you could dive down to a certain depth and you send in the robot to have a look around. And he went down before they filmed Titanic, and he's kind of saying in the article, you know, in many respects, Titanic was just an excuse for him to go diving on the wreck. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, somebody like that just going off and doing it. I mean, we need those kind of people. It's really cool.
Shouldn't they all be working on World Hunger though, or something else, or is this just boys and toys, Michele? Or are there spin-offs? Are there benefits from humanity from these wealthy individuals indulging their interests? Go ahead. Sorry.
One word.
Yes.
Inspiration.
Yes.
That's it.
They're
no more. I mean, it's inspiring. I mean. Yeah. This is the thing. I mean, you look at, say, somebody, you know, climbers who climb Everest or some other mountain, and, you know, why do they do it? Because it's there. Mm. And it's that kind of inspiration that, you know, that drives you forward. I mean, ultimately, if you actually sit back and look at what you do on your daily life, You need some kind of inspiration, something to aspire to, something to make you get out of bed in the morning, and, you know, paying the bills isn't going to get you out of bed.
And you know something, I mean, if in his work life, Jeff Bezos, for example, has transformed retail, James Cameron has broken ground in the arts, Richard Branson is kicking ass everywhere he turns around and looks. All of these people are transforming the world in their work life. You know, they've got to play as well.
Well, yeah, and I mean, but even when they're playing, what they're doing is it's extraordinary. I mean, and
they play
big. The real meaning of the word. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not normal. I mean, it's not a kind of, you know, I might kick back in the evening and watch a couple of DVDs or Blu-ray or whatever, or talk to you. Whereas these guys are off doing really cool stuff.
Yeah. We've got loads of cool stuff to talk about, and we'll get to that in part two. I want to talk to you about what you're promoting in Black Knight this week as well. But first, very briefly, Dropbox have increased the amount they are offering you if you tell your friends to join the company, or tell your friends to join and use their service.
Yeah, I mean, Dropbox, it's fascinating to watch how those guys have actually grown their user base. And it's all by referrals.
Are they making money?
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea.
Do you know something? I'm using Dropbox, and I'm not even sure if I'm paying for it or not. I think I'm just using the free part of it. But it is, and again, it's funny because, you know, I have servers with Black Knight, for example. I have cloud space, cloud storage space of my own. Yet there is something about using these kind of these Dropbox services and being able to very easily share things with other people. It's kind of compelling.
Yeah, well, the Dropbox concept. I mean, sure, there's been a lot of talk about security issues and all that kind of thing, but. You know, for example, I share some, you know, graphics files with James, our designer.
Exactly.
And we do it via Dropbox because it's much, much easier. You just drop the file into a folder on your hard drive. Well, it's not actually on your hard drive. It's a virtual folder. Mm. And it magically appears on the other person's computer. And, I mean, we've been using it for other things, like within ICANN, one of the working groups. We've been sharing presentations and a few other files, you know, for people spread across the globe. I mean, that technology, it's really cool. I mean, it's you know, instead of people trying to send massive attachments via email and breaking people's email servers, you can just drop the files that way. But, of course, Dropbox could be unseated. I think there's talk now of Google or Amazon launching a similar type of service.
G Drive has been mentioned recently again.
Yeah, and I mean, whether that'll unseat Dropbox or not, I don't know, but it's nice to see an alternative to Google, because, I mean, we all love Google, but at the same time, do we really want to give them more of our data? And something I always kind of worry a little bit about is you know, do they have too much information? Do they have too much of our data?
Let's talk about the Black Knight promotion this week, Michele. What are you doing?
Well, it's Easter, so we're running a little promotion on .eu domain names and also hosting. So if you use the coupon code EASTEREGG with no spaces, you'll get .eu domain names for a mere $3.99 ex-VAT for the first year, and you'll get a nice big discount of around about 25% or thereabouts on our shared hosting plans.
Pretty good. You can find out more at blackknight.com.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're listening to Technology.ie, the podcast brought to you by Black Knight. I'm Conor Muinichon, and I'm joined, as usual, by Michele Nealon, CEO of Black Knight, and my colleague in this endeavour. Michele, let's talk about, as I mentioned before we started there, I was watching the recording on Ustream of the live stream of the debate, which was in the Science Gallery the other day. Lunchtime debate. Did you watch it live, the copyright review debate with Minister Sean Sherlock and others?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I missed the first 2 or 3 minutes, but I caught the rest of it.
good stuff. I know I haven't watched it all the way through just yet, but Minister, I thought, set out his position reasonably well. He's anxious, and we've covered this before, I don't want to go into it in too much detail, he's anxious to separate the fact that there was this statutory instrument that he felt had to be signed last month or the month before he went ahead and did that, but he doesn't want that to distract from the fact that there is actually a comprehensive review underway, initiated last year by Minister Richard Bruton when he commissioned Dr. Owen O'Dell and others to work on this consultation paper, the Copyright Review Committee. The paper has been published and the consultation process is underway at the moment, and it's actually pretty comprehensive, Michele, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, it goes into a lot of detail. It covers a whole range of different issues, and it also goes into a whole range of different ways of handling copyright moving forward. And I think it's actually it's quite fascinating, because it's looking at reviewing it in its entirety, not just reviewing some small part of it, but taking the entire thing and looking at how you can get that balance right, how you can protect rights and interests and also allow freedom of expression and creativity.
For example, one of the things that's mentioned in it is fair use, which is a fairly comprehensive doctrine and a fairly robust principle, for example, in US law, but not really, there's a concept in law on this side of the Atlantic, in Britain and in Ireland, called fair dealings, which isn't anywhere near as comprehensive. But this document asks the question whether or not we should have some kind of a fair use doctrine on a more statutory footing, which would, for example, give protection to people who use copyright material for the purposes of criticism or reporting the news or other similar activities like that.
Yeah, and this is something which I mean personally I have very, very strong feelings about. I mean, the lack of a fair use under Irish law is a huge problem, because what we've seen in the past is where let's say somebody puts up a website to criticize something. I mean, be it a person or an entity, and might use an image, and the criticism itself might be protected at some level, but the use of the image wouldn't be. Which is
and
ridiculous.
Here's the thing: if you're the person or the organization being criticized, and if you have enough money and clout under the existing setup, you can have that website, for example, shut down, effectively silencing the criticism, and you can do it on the grounds that they've breached your copyright.
Yeah, which is a bit ridiculous. I mean, you know, there's been plenty of cases, both in the US and in Europe, around these kind of company sucks type websites. But I mean, you know, there is a concept, in a very, very strong concept in US law, of allowing for freedom of speech and allowing for fair use. And that it's something that a lot of Irish people aren't really aware of, the fact that it doesn't really exist under Irish law.
And this is a point was made by, I'm not sure, was it by Paul Durant of the Internet Service Providers Association? Is that correct, Michele?
It's the ISP Association of Ireland. It's a bit of a mouthful.
Very good. And that includes companies such as yourself, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, we're members of the ISP Association as well as being members of the IIA.
Right. And, I beg your pardon, there's my phone ringing. I'll just turn that off now. Ah, there's my new Android phone. I can't figure out how to turn it off. Hang on. Ah, you do it that way. That's the way. You have to swipe to refuse or to accept a call. All right. Beg your pardon for that. Where were we? Yeah, so Paul Durant spoke, Tom Murphy of boards.ie spoke, and Simon McGarr, there was a question whether he would be on the panel or not, and there was a debate about it beforehand, and the minister graciously, I think, decided that he did want Simon to be on the panel and extended the hand of friendship, and they engaged in debate, robust debate, I think, in that encounter the other day at the Science Gallery. But somebody made the point, I think it might have been Tom Murphy, that a company is obliged to, or a management of a company is obliged to its directors not to put a company at any financial risk. The problem with existing legislation is that as a hosting provider, as a service provider, as someone who has a website or anything like that, you can find yourself in a situation where you, and not the person who has breached the copyright, but you who own the site are liable for something that someone else has done. And in this case, there's also the point was made that it stifles innovation and it stifles new ideas and new things which could be done because the threat of copyright infringement and its consequences are just too great.
Well, yeah, and I mean, this is a debate which is much bigger than anything that's going on here in Ireland. I mean, this is an international debate, an international problem, because I mean, what's been happening is that websites and domains and things like that. I mean, we've touched on this several times in the past. You know, where entire domains have been taken offline due to one or two users out of thousands infringing on copyright. So, you know, the problem, of course, is, you know, how do you get that balance right? How do you get it so that the infringement is dealt with where it is actually infringement and you don't have people abusing their rights in order to stifle free speech? So, you know, it's not something that's going to be resolved overnight. But, I mean, that other link you gave us there, which is on a US initiative to set up an actual, what are they referring to themselves as?
This is a new organisation, and it's similar, I think, to the Copyright Council, which is one of the proposals that would be, I think, in Dr. Owen O'Dell's document. Let me just bring this up here. It is basically a... and we're linking to an article in Ars Technica in relation to it. They're calling it the Centre for Copyright Information, which is the organisation, quoting from the article here, the organisation tasked with overseeing a new anti-piracy scheme negotiated by the nation's leading content companies and ISPs last summer in the United States. That has begun to take shape Monday. They've announced their board. They've announced also, as well as a board of directors, an advisory board, which includes people who are very much would be considered on the anti-copyrights side. In particular, Gigi Sohn is one of the people who's on that, who's from an organisation called Public Knowledge, who's been one of the most persistent critics of major content companies and their campaign for ever harsher copyright laws. This seems surprisingly level-headed, Michele.
Yeah, I mean, this is what you need. I mean, this is the kind of thing that, you know, it makes sense. You know, getting the idea of, having the idea of, you know, bringing in everybody and having a proper discussion, a proper dialogue, so that, you know, you get both sides. You don't just get the deep pockets and the lobbyists for those deep pockets. You get the other side, the people who are from, you know, civil society.
And three strikes appears to be turning into six strikes in the United States. That is, this Center for Copyright Information is going to be overseeing this new scheme, which will be a graduated response, even more graduated, obviously, if it's going from three to six to copyright infringers. But we'll go into that in more detail, I think, again, Michele. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of it. But that is going on at the moment in the United States. Let's move on. Facebook Timeline for Pages, it went live last week.
It's been interesting to look at what people are doing. I mean, I've been poking around on a number of Facebook pages that I'd visit, and I've seen a few blog posts where the people are highlighting some of them. And, you know, some companies have done, and well, not just companies, other organizations have done some really, really simple but very slick and very stylish things with it. I mean, I think what a few companies have done things like using the timeline to actually display like a history of the company. So let's say a company that might be a couple of hundred years old, they're able to put up content going back all the way back to their foundation, you know, 200 years ago.
And as you've pointed out in a blog post, we'll link to this in the site on technology.ie as well, Michele. If you have a company page, and again, it's not rocket science administering your online social media presence, you would do well to check in there and see how it looks now, because like it or not, this new timeline look for the pages has taken effect. And some pages, including one that I'm responsible for, I've only looked at it there as you were speaking, look horrendous in it. Because, for example, the avatar that I have, the profile picture that I had for the page, is now squashed into a square which doesn't suit it. And I don't have a cover picture added. These are simple enough things, and the information is there. It's in particular in that article on your blog written by James Larkin, which is very effective. It tells you everything you need to know, basically, to make your page look well in this new timeline view.
Yeah, and I mean, I also posted a couple of times on the technology.ie blog during the week a couple of other infographics and links to articles about the new Facebook timeline. Because the thing is, if you poke around Facebook a bit and, you know, you go to visit companies' pages, or you follow links from their websites to their pages, there's a lot of Facebook pages that have been left unattended. And, I mean, never mind anything else, but, you know, people have not, you know, made any updates, made any changes to deal with the Facebook timeline, or more seriously, to take a look at things like applications that aren't using SSL, which Facebook forced on everybody, must be 9 months ago, maybe. So you can't actually get to those applications that people are linking to. They no longer work.
So if your app isn't able to use HTTPS, then
it no longer works.
It no longer works. And you mean there are some of those out there that have been orphaned, essentially?
Thousands of them, probably.
Right.
I mean, the thing is this, is that if you remember, like, even when we ran a giveaway and we used a third-party application to do that, so it was, you load up in a frame, or maybe it could be a redirect or something like that, a little bit of code, PHP or whatever, to add extra functionality. It could be for running a competition. It could be for, you know, getting subscribers to a mailing list. It could be to give away something. It could be for any number of different things. And the thing is that if you haven't updated that to comply with the way Facebook is doing things, it might cease to function completely. And with the Facebook timeline as well, several things have changed. I mean, the tabs and all that are gone completely. There are no tabs. I mean, you can send people to specific bits of content, but the actual tab paradigm is gone. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. So it's a simple common sense we referred to earlier on when we were talking about how your companies suck at social media. It's not rocket science, but at the same time, you can't just neglect it either. It's a simple matter of paying attention. And I suppose the first thing is eat your own dog food. Visit your own social media page and see how it looks to everyone else.
Exactly. And it only, you know, putting in a cover photo, I mean, you can do it on your personal profile. I mean, people have been have had that option for a few months now. So, you know, there's no excuse for not doing it for your page. And if you make the change, it can really improve the impact. I mean, I was very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? I wasn't too sure whether the timeline would work for a business, but I'm looking at our Facebook page, and James did a fantastic job with our nice little header image. And you know, it's got a lot more, you know, kick, I suppose, or something. It's got more oomph. It looks good.
Very good. Speaking of looking good, another app, an online photo sharing site. You've sent me a link to this Via.me, and you said, did we talk about this already? No, we didn't, Michele. Why should we?
Because it's really, really simple. It's really cool. I really like it.
What's cool about it?
It's easy to use. There's an iPhone app, and there's probably apps for other mobile devices. If there aren't, they probably will have them. And at the simplest level, you can take a photograph on your iPhone and upload it, and, you know, run it through a number of filters and all that kind of thing. But it's very simple. It's very similar to other photo sharing apps, but with the difference being that you can get an actual URL. So you can go to via.me/mnalen, and you'll find my profile on there. It integrates with Facebook. You can integrate it with Twitter. So when you post something there, you can share it easily and quickly.
I've just signed up for it while you were talking there, and I signed in using my Twitter account. So it finds the people I follow already on Twitter, and they are now in my via.me feed, so I can see what various people are posting, yourself included. A couple of people using it already. Interesting, yeah, I'll play around with it, certainly, without a doubt. Reminds me of Pinterest, which we discussed, just in terms of the look of it, I suppose, in many ways, which we discussed recently as well. And you mentioned that people should think about claiming their username in Pinterest. It's growing so fast.
Yeah, because it's one of these things. I mean, via.me allows you to do it. You can have your, you know, via.me forward slash username. So like via.me forward slash mnalen. And Pinterest does the same thing. And it's just, if you're using the same username across multiple social networks, so for example, with ourselves, we're at Black Knight on Twitter or forward slash Black Knight on Facebook. And went along earlier today to discover that our Pinterest username had already been taken.
Oh. So,
you know, that could have been quite a bit of a headache.
Yeah. Because
it could have been nabbed by somebody else. Other people could have been going there. I mean, it's one of those things that people need to be careful of. If you're, you know, if you're building your brand online, you're using social media, making sure that you have your username. Now, in our case, it wasn't an issue because we've multiple trademarks and we were able to get the username back via the trademark. But it can be a problem. I mean, it's not easy sometimes. And, you know, with some of the social networks, they won't reassign a username easily. You can end up basically orphaned, you know, or stuck using an alternative username that you might not like.
Finally, Michele, you brought to my attention St. Patrick's Day in Siberia. What's that about?
Well,
you said totally irrelevant, but quite amusing. What's it about?
Well, if you actually have a look at the video, as I say, it's totally irrelevant.
I haven't looked at the video, so I'm going to do it now as we watch this together. Let's bring this up and have a look. It's a YouTube video of a celebration of St. Patrick's Day in...
It's in an Arab...
I have no idea what that man said. It was in Russian, I presume. But is his face painted in an Irish tricolour? Okay, that's the YouTube video. It's very, very good. It's a group of Siberians celebrating St. Patrick's Day in an Irish pub called Clever in Novosibirsk. How's your Russian pronunciation, Michele?
Well, if it wasn't for the fact that Novosibirsk is so important to people working in the software industry, I wouldn't have a clue.
Why is it important to people working in the software industry?
Because if you're using several hosting automation tools, a lot of the developers are actually based in Novosibirsk.
Oh, that's interesting.
So Parallels Automation, who we use, some of their staff are actually in that video.
There's
also other software companies, I believe OnApp as well, have some staff in Novosibirsk. For some reason, it's the city in Siberia that has a lot of software people in it.
And a lot of, I must say, they're very Irish-looking Siberians.
Somebody sent me the link earlier on this evening, and I thought to myself, that's absolutely hilarious. I mean... Yeah, you know, this is the Irish podcast technology, and hey,
absolutely. They've got the whole lot. They've got the costumes. They've got St. Patrick's Day pages. They've got shamrocks. They've got tricolours to beat the band. They've got it's all branding, I think, for this particular pub. But it seems I had this experience one time myself, actually, in Aachen in Germany when I was there on a work trip, and we were a multicultural bunch from various European countries working for a European software company, and. I remember in particular at the end of a day's meetings and seminars and conferences and everything like that, we were launching a project, I think, at the time, and there was a general consensus, where are we going out tonight? Oh yeah, without a doubt, the Irish pub. And that's where I found myself, the solitary Irishman in a group of about 25 people at this. But it's definitely a place, it's definitely an experience, the Irish pub abroad, Michele, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, when I travel abroad, I mean, I don't go to Irish pubs most of the time, but I have ended up in them.
But I bet you found yourself dragged along now by Austrians and Greeks and all kinds of people to the Irish pub for one reason or another.
Well, I was in San Francisco for St. Patrick's Day last year, which is an interesting experience, and ended up in a kind of an Irish bar around the corner from the hotel we were staying in with a bunch of FBI and Interpol and other kind of law enforcement characters. It was different, to say the least.
Well, of course, that's the Irish police stereotype there, I suppose, reinforcing itself, perhaps.
Possibly.
Who knows? Michele, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. That's it for this week. If you want to leave a message on the website or a comment on anything that we do, you'll find it all. And several blog posts as well by Michele and myself at technology.ie. Shinnewill, slongafold.